The vibes have changed. The Nuggets destroyed the Lakers, but the Jazz were too much. This is Locked On Nuggets.
You are Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. Thanks for making this your first listen each and every day. We are free and we are available on all platforms. Thanks for joining us. My name is Matt Moore. I'm the senior NBA writer for the Action Network and the Nuggets insider for 104.3 The Fan in Denver. His name is Adam Mares. He's the director of content for DMVR, thedmvr.com, coming to us from the DMVR bar tonight after the Nuggets loss to the Utah Jazz in Denver as part of the road or homestand rolls on. 125-102 as it got away from the Nuggets late in the game. Adam, I will ask you, do you want to start with the Lakers game or the Jazz game?
We can start, I guess, in chronological order. People probably want to hear about the Lakers win. We can go there first.
So then I will give you my big takeaway, which is what I would have done last night had we recorded, which is we speculated that the vibe had changed.
Okay.
After the Blazers game, that something had shifted. And we were
maybe,
like, well.
Maybe after the Clippers game.
Yeah, after the Clippers game.
Yeah, it's like a low point.
So I asked a little bit more about that to the guys post game, and Bones in particular like confirmed it.
Really?
That they got together, and he said that they talked some things out.
Right, right.
And I don't know what that means.
Right.
But that's how I think it did change, because on Saturday night, very predictably, versus the Lakers, they always get up for this game. I bet against them, and I immediately regret it as soon as the game started, because I was like, of course they're up for this game. It's the Lakers at home on a Saturday. The Nuggets beat the ever-loving purple out of the blue, the four in blue and gold. Lakers just pants them on NBA TV. Absolutely destroyed them in what was unquestionably, I think, Bones Highland's finest performance of the season.
It might have been. I mean, career high, but the Nuggets were great in that game. Jokic in particular, you know, I was following you on the timeline even, you know, for that one. And you I think, were articulating it right in the first 5 minutes of this game. Dwight Howard, a problem for Jokic. First 5 minutes of this game, it's kind of back and forth. And the Lakers are getting layups. Dwight Howard's getting layups. And you're thinking like, okay, let's see what happens. Here we go. After that moment, it was a complete and total evisceration of Dwight Howard that resulted in Dwight Howard getting benched. They actually were like, all right, let's try DeAndre Jordan. That's how much I thought Jokic got in a groove and started to go at him. And to me, if we talk about my real takeaway from that game is that the Lakers are probably worse than I had thought. But my second takeaway was I was really proud of Jokic in particular and how well he handled that matchup, especially after a shaky start, to the point where I look at it and I go, I think he might have solved that equation.
Yeah, I agree. I want to talk about that with you, was that in that second quarter where they started getting him the catch on the move, they started getting him basically making sure that he was cutting and getting the ball then and being able to cut to the bat. Like, once Dwight Howard couldn't just guard him in the post, Dwight, as good as he is as a defender, was toast. Like, that was over. So it was a really good adjustment, I thought, to stretch them out and play more perimeter and then outside in rather than just inside out. Don't feed into the matchup. Don't let Dwight, you know, be physical and play the game that he wants. Get him on the move. Take advantage of the fact that the Lakers' team defense is wretched. And that second quarter was really a thing of beauty.
Yeah. So I was impressed. You know, Bones Highland obviously had a great game in that one. Faku had a great game in that one. Just everybody kind of, Zeke Nagy had a great game in that one. It was a feel-good win. And even, I still think it's a good win for the Nuggets, in part because it's a 37-point win against the Lakers.
Sure.
That's always a Lakers-Nuggets split crowd at Pepsi at Ball Arena. It just always is, probably always will be. So that's a game that I feel like carried its own certain weight to it. I mean, I saw you also on the timeline, you know, yelling at my guy Vogt saying, hey, it's not an important game. And you're right, it's not important. Like, there's different layers of importance. It wasn't an important game in terms of like, yes, it was a January game. We never remember these games, you know, whatever. But I do feel like it was important for Denver just in that they're trying to figure out. They're trying to figure things out. And I felt like that was a game where they did figure some things out and gain some momentum. So that's why to me, I was like, no, this is a meaningful game. It was important to the Nuggets.
my specific point in my conflict with your consigliere was that I felt that the criticism that Aaron Gordon was not up for the moment was off. Is that Aaron Gordon has had a lot more moments in his career that, like, look, he's been with the Magic. I hear you, but look, Gordon, they went to the playoffs. Playoff games are bigger than this game.
So
we can agree on that, yes?
We're going to disagree on the a lot part. But nonetheless, he has had more important games. Not a lot.
The Magic honestly were contending for playoff spots pretty often during that Vucevic show because they were trying to win.
Right.
And Gordon was in those games. And to me, those games had more importance than this one. And also, just I don't like the aspersion that like I think Aaron has been up for the moment at several times this season and in the playoffs last year. That was my only point, was just that I'm not going to judge a player being like up for the moment in these games. Your moments in the NBA are, it used to be just the playoffs. Now it's that last month and a half because of the play-in, and the playoffs. That's my feeling.
Well, we can disagree about this one. If this kind of reminds me about how we talk about clutch, you know, whenever people say clutch, it's like, did they make the shot in the final 30 seconds or the final 5 minutes of a close game? What are the statistics? I think clutch can be a shot in the second quarter. I mean, there's times when it's like you came in and you stopped the bleeding on a team that had an 8-0 run and you came in and made two shots in a row. And that was clutch because it calmed things down. This is the same way. And that was it a big game in the context that you're talking about? No. But I feel like that was a spiritually big game. Nuggets or Lakers? Going into that, feels weird now because Nuggets won by 37. But going into that game, it was like, who's the team that's for real down bad? Which one of you is it? And by the way, that was a game that either was going to put Denver up three losses in the loss column, or three wins in the loss column, or it was going to tie them basic effectively in the standings. And instead, Denver created separation. So to me, it was a big game. It was a like, hey, who's going to be down bad? And by the way, it was right. The Lakers, after that game, Magic Johnson calls them out. Everybody calls them out. Lakers Twitter has a meltdown. The Lakers
LeBron apologizes.
LeBron had to apologize to Lakers Nation. Like so that's why I think that game actually was big. Maybe not in the same context or to the degree of what you're referencing, but I think spiritually it was an important game. And by the way, after that interaction you guys had, was Aaron Gordon's shining moment, which was him getting into it with Russell Westbrook,
he started off great. He hit a three and made a dunk. So I guess he is ready for the moment. I'm sorry.
I will say this. I thought that I do not think he entered that game with the same level of urgency as the other guys, but it did come along for him later on in the game.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess AG's a clown fraud that hides from the moment. So with the rest of the Lakers game, like Bones was phenomenal, right? Like Bones was incredible. We got to talk about Bones.
Bones had a fantastic game. He really did.
The shiftiness, everything that we've talked
Six
about.
3-pointers.
But the also part of it is like, you could tell how hyped he was for this Lakers game. Like you could just tell how hyped he was for it. And it's fun to see that. I'll say this. Usually I'm the pessimist skeptic of these things. I'm cynical. But for me, I look at that and I go, okay, as he gets older, he'll learn to translate that energy in that Lakers game into consistency across moments so that he's better in those, like, because that's really what they need from him. Is they need like a fraction of that Lakers game in every game. They just need it to not be boom or bust, because as we'll get to in the second segment, the Jazz game was very much not that. And back to back, lots of considerations, much better team. But this is part of it. Like, this is part of the process for Bones. Is like, you at least can see that and go, he can do this. He's just got to figure out how to channel it right and get better at the small stuff.
I'm not very optimistic about Bones being a consistent impact player this year. Because he is going to be, I think, a peaks and valleys type guy. There's some interesting strategic stuff we'll get into, I know, in the next segment with Utah, because I think that game had more like interesting X's and O's things happening in that one, in particular that apply to Bones Highland. But it was nice for it to see him. He is a gamer. Like, some of the things we know about him, I think he's very competitive. I think he's hyper competitive. He's not afraid of big moments, sometimes too much so. And that was a game where I felt like he thrived under the sort of chippiness of it. You know, he kind of elevated his game during that. And, it was fun to watch. Bones, I've long said this on this show, this homestand was going to be Bones Highland, if he was going to get it, it was going to start to happen on this one. We're three games in. And I actually think that that held up even against the Utah Jazz tonight, which he was not good. And the plus minus says that he was absolutely atrocious, which I think is pretty accurate. But he still gets 13 points tonight, and it goes 3 of 10 from the three-point line. So he had a couple moments there where you go, okay, that's some pretty good move, or, you know, pretty good this or that.
I'm trying to think what else. The Lakers' body language was frightening.
The story of that game is the Lakers. It really is. My God.
Which is you've got to love that. The Nuggets win by 37 and the story is still the Lakers. But yes, the Lakers were just, I mean, they just quit. Like, they quit all over. Their body language, they just moped in and out of every single timeout. And it was funny because, like, LeBron by the third quarter was like, okay, all right, it's one of these. All right, well, here I am. I'm going to spin move, bust in the lane, sidestep, right-handed left side layup, and one. Like, he was just punching clock and still doing LeBron things because he can. But you could tell that LeBron was just like, I'm just here. I'm just doing the job. But boy,
LeBron, so frustrating.
Russ was atrocious. He was god awful.
Yeah.
I'm a Russ guy. He was god awful. Malik Monk gave them some good minutes, but man, like, the Nuggets just steamrolled them. And
they can't guard anybody. My goodness. And like I said, you watch that game, LeBron was out there. And look, this wasn't LeBron's best effort. Like, you're right. He was pouty. He was whiny. I mean, he looks like a guy that's ready to quit. It's so crazy to say. But you watch that game. Was there any question who the best player on the court was? Was there ever a moment where you thought, who is the best player? It was Jokic dominating that game every second he was on the court, to the extent that he didn't have to play in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, it was extreme. It was an extreme performance. And look, I think when you look at that game too, I would say that he did get help, right? Like, Aaron Gordon was quietly like 11 points, 4 of 9. Third quarter was really good. Jeff Green with 26 on 10 of 14 with all the dunks.
He was insane.
Will got him started early. Like, he had a lot of pep in his step to start, right? Like, Will got him started. And again, like, you just kind of saw, like, the Nuggets starters were like, okay, we're not going to need to pour it on tonight. And then you get that kind of performance off the bench, especially Davon Reed, 4 of 7 from the
field. He was great. He was fantastic.
And the huge defensive stop where he disrupted. He went after LeBron's handle, which is honestly, if you can, it's the best way to do it. Like, he didn't back off of him. He didn't give him an extra step. He challenged him on the handle to disrupt things.
Well, here's the thing. Davon Reed with that 7-foot wingspan, guys with the really long reach and wingspan, I think should go for the ball more. It's like, you got to use the tools that are at your disposal. Davon Reed has a very unique reach and wingspan, and I think using it as weapons to really get the hands in there and strike is key for him, and it's part of what makes him a good defender. But those was a great sequence, an all-timer. So I saw somebody posted, I think maybe it was Harrison, posted on Twitter every possession where he guarded LeBron. And it wasn't, that play stands out because it was so big. It was basically two stops in one possession. But there were 4 or 5 plays like that where he just forced him into a tough pass or a tough shot or stole the ball from him outright. And I was very impressed with Davon Reed.
Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about the Jazz game. Not so exciting. We'll get a sense for where the team is at, big picture, when we come back on Locked On Nuggets. But first, I want to tell you about Shopify. Shopify is the absolute best way for you to find the all-in-one commercial platform to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved for big businesses, so upstarts, startups, and established businesses alike can sell everywhere, synchronize online and in-person sales, and effortlessly stay informed. Scaling your business is a journey of endless possibility. So, let you know that Shopify powers millions of businesses from first sale to full scale. You can reach customers online and across social networks with an ever-growing suite of channel integrations and apps, including Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, and more. More than a store, Shopify grows with you. This is possibility powered by Shopify. Go to shopify.com/lockedonNBA, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/lockedonNBA right now. Shopify.com/lockedonNBA. We'll be right back on Locked On Nuggets. Thanks for making Locked On Nuggets your first listen. For your next listen, check out Locked On Now podcast. Nightly recaps of every NBA games with analysis from local experts. Listen to Locked On Now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or watch it on the Locked On NBA YouTube channel. Back here with Adam Mares. All right, Adam, the vibes were great. It was a thrilling night on Saturday. Everything was wonderful. And then the Jazz came into town. Michael Malone, before the game, commented on having to face the Jazz on a back-to-back. Yeah. After the game, commented on having to face the Jazz on a back-to-back. And before the game, commented on having to face the Jazz on back-to-back every single time this season, or three of the four.
Yeah.
So, and accompanied each time with, "We're not making excuses." So, look, you know, is it a schedule loss? Yes. Would it have been great to get a win? Yes. Is it realistic to get a win? Probably not. The way it played out, it's just very illustrative of, I'll say this, it's very illustrative of the fact that Denver is not able to successfully hang with elite teams right now because of their bench. They can't, like, I don't think that they're going to, they've been a very good team versus top end teams over the last couple of years. Like, they've gone toe to toe with the greats. They can't win these games because of the bench. Like, Jokic lost the Gobert minutes tonight, and I took a lot of grief from Jazz Twitter because I genuinely thought Jokic won his minutes. Jokic won his minutes overall, but he won them in the Rudy Gay minutes. And Gobert barely won, or solidly won. He was plus 11 in the Jokic minutes with a lot of that at the end.
Yeah, at the end. Get out of here. Jokic dominated Gobert tonight one-on-one, in my opinion.
No, that's fine. I don't disagree with that. That's why it was confusing to me. But I'm telling you, like, I looked up the numbers, and he was still a minus in each of the first three quarters with Gobert on the floor. Gotcha. Like, they got outscored. You're right that Jokic dominated him. This is not about that. This is about, are you winning the minutes, right? And a lot of that was, like, Will Barton was dead-legged and did not shoot well. Like, the rest of the Nuggets
starters. Man, he had, like, air ball. He had a lot of short shots tonight.
Yeah, he was bad. They probably celebrated the win last night. Like, I think that's probably it. And so, but even still, Jokic was a plus six, and most of the starters were in the plus until the fourth quarter. You could have won this game, but the bench comes in. And it turns out the Utah Jazz bench, because they stagger their guys, because they have all five of their very, very good players, and honestly six with Ingles, healthy, they're able to stagger guys effectively. And so they were able to just run roughshod over the bench. Even, like, Malone tried some things. He threw Barton and AG out with him. Didn't help. Like, they don't have anybody to lift those units. And so they do not, like, they cannot win these games in the regular season because you just can't play Jokic 48. You can't do it.
That's the difference between Denver and Utah. Denver doesn't necessarily have a starters and bench. They have a Jokic or non-Jokic. The Utah Jazz have very interesting staggered lineups that they can go to. And to your point, this is why this game was so interesting to me. The Jazz, and this is how they rotate all the time. This wasn't like an adjustment, you know, just for the Nuggets, but it does especially matter when you talk about the Nuggets. They play Rudy Gobert about 6 minutes, and then they send him to the bench. And they say, okay, we still have Bogdanovich. We got Jordan Clarkson. We got guys that can be out there, like a really serviceable unit. And I didn't think the Nuggets did a good enough job taking advantage of that lineup. They won it, to your point, by a little bit. But they won it by an amount that Utah was okay with, because when they brought back Rudy Gobert and Mike Conley and all of these guys, and then they have a staggered bench and starters lineup against Denver's straight bench lineup, it was an absolute massacre. 19-5 was the run between the end of the first quarter and the start of the second quarter. And if you just look at the game, that was the game right there. That's a 14-point swing. Yes, Denver lost by 23. They had another one of those swings in the second half. But even if you forget that, anytime there's a 19-5 run, your odds of winning a game go down just incredibly. So to me, it's that Utah, Denver doesn't have starters and bench. They have Jokic, non-Jokic. And the Jazz have lots of interesting combinations they could throw out. And they threw haymakers when Jokic was not on the court.
It's tough just because I mean, I don't think there's any way to, like, Utah's ability to stagger these units is phenomenal. Just in terms of, it's a luxury, but it also works because they have so many combinations that work. Like, you can throw, like, if you need to, like, all right, we're going to go to an all offensive unit. We're going to have Rudy go at center, but we're going to have Mitchell and Bogdanovich. So we have two creators in a small ball system. All right. Now we're going to go to Ingles Gobert with Bogdanovich, and we're just, or Ingles Gobert with Conley. And we're going to have one shooter and this dynamic pick and roll. Like, their ability to hit you with these is huge. Yeah. And Golden State does this too. Like, when they are at full strength, like, this is how Golden State is programmed, is they have so much depth. Is like, all right, we're going to have Curry with Kevon Looney, and we're going to run that pick and roll with Jordan Poole as a secondary creator, versus like the Nuggets are just like, well, hope we can make enough hustle plays to survive for six minutes. And it's just, and I mean, look, I have been thinking a lot about this, about it makes me, honestly, this is the big thing. It makes me legitimately want to go back and appreciate more how Jamal played with those bench units.
Right. Yep. This is great. This is it. Yep.
Because it was always like, hey, you know, Jamal and Monte, like, they've got some, like, they would, you know, they would have some years where it was really good. Like 2020 in particular, that combination was really great. But just to go back and watch and go like, oh, the bench wasn't a complete disaster.
Right.
Because Jamal was able to, and look, I will say this too. Like, I just think the Nuggets bench was better 2 years ago.
Right.
Like, I just do. I just think that, yeah, and even really 3 years ago, even pre-Jeremy, right, I think the bench was better. Legitimately. Like, I think having Mason, like, somebody, CT3 mentions, like, even MPJ was able to carry the bench. It was less that MPJ would carry the bench, and Monte would just run pick and roll with Mason, and that simple action would get MPJ.
It's simple basketball. Yeah, it's basic basketball, and you had enough guys to keep it honest. Yep.
And so, like, I mean, this is – go ahead.
No. I was going to say that's exactly what's so interesting about this, is part of what makes the Utah Jazz so interesting is, you know, Gobert's a fantastic, as much as I like to make fun of him, he's a great player. Conley's a great – Donovan Mitchell's obviously a great player. He's a superstar. You go down from that, Bogdanovich, that's a heck of a player too. You go down for that, Jordan Clarkson, that's a heck of a player. So they got all these guys. Denver right now just doesn't have that. They have some good guys. But if you start with the way they start with Mitchell and Gobert, you start with Murray and Jokic, now all of a sudden your next guys up are really dynamic pieces that you're a little bit more intrigued by. But instead, those guys are vaulted into a starting, this is your lineup, and now you're trying to count on guys like Bones Highland, Davon Reed, Facundo Campazzo, Jeff Green. And those guys are good. You know, most of those guys are good most of the time, to a certain degree, but when you need them to compete with Bogdanovich and Donovan Mitchell and all these other guys, it's like, I'm sorry, they might do that 1 out of 10 times, but they're not going to do it consistently.
I want to float this idea by you, and I think you're going to call me crazy, and that's fine. You've laughed at me about a lot of things before. I will live with it. I would ask that you really try and give this one serious consideration.
Okay.
I genuinely believe that Facu Campazzo can help you a lot versus teams under 500 and give you good minutes so you don't suffer bad losses. He's been good in minutes versus, like, he was great versus Portland. He was great versus the Lakers. He's been good versus these teams. I genuinely wonder if versus maybe some of the better teams, Marcus Howard's 3-point threat might do a little bit more. If you just, like, focus a little bit more on Facu and the teams that are sloppy and don't know what they're doing and don't know how to scheme, and then maybe go to a different look when you have, when you're facing a team that's got, like, competency.
Yeah. So I got a comment here on those lines, and I can't verify the stat guy. So I'm reading a stat that somebody watching the show in the live chat sent, and
it's Omar. You
know, but it's Omar Wynn. But I don't know if this is, I'll have to go back and check it, but I'll tell you what, it sure feels true. Facu has one game with a positive plus minus against a team above 500. And that was the New York Knicks, who are barely above 500. So if that is true, that number does seem pretty damning. If you are only good against the bad teams, then that kind of works to your point. And by the way, this is what I've been talking about. You know, when I said, talking to George Karl on the Keeping It 1000 podcast, he said he loves Facu, but he would only play him against certain matchups. I think this is part of it. I think it is hey, this is a good team, the Utah Jazz. They have a really good point guard that your bag of tricks aren't going to work against Mike Conley. They're not going to work against Donovan Mitchell. That stuff that they're too good for that. So this is not a U game. And Facu, I thought, was really bad. Like, I'm not trying to pin this all on Facu tonight. The Nuggets, I think, were probably drawing dead as you watch how this game unfolded.
Yeah. And Bones was bad too. And, like, Davon Reed had a worse plus, like, et cetera. Like, yeah. No,
but the Jazz are really good. But on top of that, like, even if everybody is healthy, this probably is not a Facu night. And there might be something to that. But being said, there's real value in guys that can help you through those sub 500 teams. So
I agree.
So that you're right that that could be a really nice bet. It sounds like an insult or a backhanded compliment, but it actually is something that's like, no, man, we can count on this guy tonight to go up against RJ Hampton and really cause some disruptions and get four or five steals. And you know what? Yoke's going to not have to play the fourth quarter tonight. That's great.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's just like, just don't put it to where you're at risk of a really disappointing and frustrating loss. Yeah. Just, you know, because, and that's the thing is like, I think he's good in those minutes. I think he's shown that, especially I've noticed this particularly versus if you're a team that's bad defensively and you just don't know what you're doing and you're disorganized. And like, this is the exact opposite of the Jazz. The Jazz know what they're doing at every single moment. Like, they always know what they're doing. They are extremely competent team.
They execute extremely well.
They're so good at execution. But yeah, like, I think you need a little chaos. That's part of it. It's like, and Faku's chaos is a little bit different, right? It's just like a different type of chaos. Yeah. Again, was great versus Portland. Fantastic versus Portland. Was really good versus the Lakers. But right. I do wonder if that's something to watch here.
I honestly, Matt, think that there's something there. Now, I don't think it's sub 500 teams. Like, there's not a formula that's that simple. Yeah. But I do think it's like, hey, is this a backcourt?
Yeah.
It's matchup. Is this a backcourt you can disrupt? All right, let's do it.
Last thing before we get a break, you and I know how the NBA regular season works in that guys are like, I want to come in at this point and I want to exit at this point. I'll come back at this point and I'll leave it at the end of the, and then it's halftime, right? Like the rotate and keeping those consistent rotations is important to players. And Malone honestly struggled with this back to, you know, 2016-17. He had a real big problem with guys' minutes being inconsistent, and it frustrated them. If you look across the league, and there's a website you can go to that's, if you just search for NBA rotations, there's a website that literally just posts every team's rotations, and you can get a sense for it. Ryan Blackburn posts the Nuggets rotations every single game. But if you want to look around the league, you can do that. Popcornmachine.net also shows you these things. It gets you an evaluation, and you will see game after game after game, the guys enter and leave. The Jazz did not be like, oh, you know what we can do tonight? We can hit the Nuggets with Gobert and the Jazz unit.
It's what they do. That's what they do.
Gobert played the exact same minutes that he always does. Right. They have set rotations. However, I will ask you this. Given the situation that the Nuggets are in, and I didn't get a chance to ask Malone this after the game because I was home for some reason. In this matchup specifically, and like there's only one left, so I really don't think it's worth it. But going forward, would you mirror Jokic's minutes with Gobert?
No. You get in a playoff series, you might do that. But a regular season, I just don't think you disrupt those types of things.
You just live it?
Yeah, I think you just – and honestly, like, it's good practice. I mean, there's, like, things you can learn from him. One of the things I would learn if I was going into this next matchup is, hey, you know you're going to go up against Rudy Gay tonight for 9 minutes. Like, we got to win those. Those 9 minutes need to be a plus 12, plus 15. And it's not just Jokic. It's like, hey, what's our strategy? That's one thing that I thought was a little underwhelming, is I didn't feel like the Nuggets got the ball to Jokic even in those minutes as much as I want. And there were even some shots, especially in that first stint, where I'm like, we're doing it again, wasting possessions when you let them off the hook when Rudy Gay has to go bang with Jokic down on the block, but you don't make him do it. You're letting them off the hook. So to me, I think it's more of a challenge. And by the way, when I think about why wasn't Denver better prepared, it might have simply just been the fact that they didn't have a practice. Like, this might be a thing where it's like, they're going to practice for the first time on Tuesday for the first time in 2 months. Maybe that's when they go over some of this. Cause it's, by the way, Utah does it the most loudly, but a lot of teams are starting to pack the paint. After the game tonight, Jokic said, everybody knows we can't shoot or something to that extent. Like, I think that the Nuggets desperately need this practice time that's coming on Tuesday for them to say, hey guys, here's the base. Now we're not going to make a crazy game plan here, but here's the basics. When teams are sagging and doubling Jokic and fronting him and doing all this, here's what we're going to do about that. And hopefully they come up with a quick fix.
You mentioned kind of like he mentioned the shooting. They just shot 20 plus threes in back-to-back games. As a bettor, I know that if a team hits 20 threes in a game, the immediate move is to bet the under in the following game. They broke that trend by beating the Lakers and hitting 20 plus threes. So a shot regression was honestly par for the course across NBA history tonight. Just wanted to make that little note.
Part of this though is good defense or bad defense in Portland, bad defense in Lakers, good defense in Utah. Like,
yeah,
that's a lot of it.
Let's take a break. We'll come back. We want to talk about the Draymond Green situation in Golden State. We'll talk about the MVP race, and I want to talk about the overall. I want to get back to the question of vibes. We'll do that when we come back on Locked On Nuggets. But first, Oh, that's right. It's time. I must tell you about Built Bar. It's the new year, so that means New Year's resolutions. If yours is about getting fit or eating healthier, make sure you include Built Bar in your plan. It's the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Maybe even better than candy bar. It makes it easier to stick to your resolution because it tastes so good you'll want to eat it. Unlike protein bars that can taste chalky or waxy or taste like a chemical spill. How descriptive. You want to eat healthy, but it just gets so boring. You want to ask, where's the chocolate? Well, Built Bars are covered in 100% real chocolate. Still, they've only got 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, and only 4 net carbs, along with 17 grams of protein. Here's an idea for the new year. Go to all your secret treat stashes at home, in the pantry, at the office, in the car, whatever, and throw out all those sugary or calorie-filled treats and replace them with Built Bars so that when you're craving a snack or treat, you can reach them for something that's healthy and tastes incredible. There's so many flavors to choose from. Coconut almond, that's my personal favorite. Peanut butter brownie, raspberry, cookies and cream, salted caramel, mint brownie, many more. In fact, Built is always coming out with new limited-time flavors, so check out Built.com often to see what's new. Go to Built.com and use promo code LOCKED15, LOCKED15. 15 and get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. We're also brought to you by Bet Online. That would have wish to have you wish to have you would like to wish you a happy new betting year as they continue their march to the playoffs and beyond. Bet Online remains the number one spot for all the best sports wagering action for 2022. New year and a new updated desktop and mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, to get started. From football with the NFL playoffs, I have no idea, like, what teams are even in it, really. Like, I don't know, like, what teams are in the playoffs right now, but there's many teams that are in the playoffs and advancing to the divisional round that you can check out. From football, basketball, hockey, boxing, and UFC, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for 2022. Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports. Bet Online, where the game starts. We'll be right back on Locked On Nuggets. Thanks for making Locked On Nuggets your first listen each and every day. Now make your second listen Locked On Bets, your daily one-stop shop for all your gambling needs. You got your boy Q with expert analysis and insight from Lee Sterling. It's free and available on all platforms. So, Adam, I want to talk a little bit. Let's do this. Let's talk about the vibes, and then we'll talk about, I want to talk about the MVP, and then we'll close with Draymond because that impacts the Western Conference race. Does it sound good?
Yep.
Okay. So, I really do believe that the Clippers game is going to represent a turning point. I believe this.
Okay.
Even tonight, they lost by double digits and lost huge. I do think that their energy and commitment was better tonight. I think it was a tough game versus a really good opponent. But their level of, I keep using this word with my wife, their joie de vivre was way better.
Okay.
Was better.
Right. I'm not going to use that one, but all right.
Versus the games prior to the Clippers game. It really seemed like whatever discussion they had in that Clippers after that Clippers game really did seem like they cleared some stuff out. And in particular, I'll note this. I think Michael Malone, I think, probably had a little bit of a look in the mirror moment after that game. I think he realized, and this has been a pattern with him, he's got to lighten things up, that things have to get like, and I think also he could see, you could see the light in the tunnel.
Yeah.
I think it's that, like, that was maybe the bottom of the well, maybe not. Yeah. Maybe they'll smash through the bottom and into the subterranean depths of the earth this week. But to me, I look at that game and I do think that there's a genuine chance that was a turning moment for the season, despite the loss to Utah.
I agree. I absolutely agree, especially about that first point about this game tonight. Significant to me, significantly less problematic than a lot of the games we saw, you know, over the last 6 weeks. And that this was one that I think Denver was just outgunned. You know, they were outgunned. They were on a second night of a back-to-back, not making excuses. But I look at it and I go, it would have taken a much more perfect game from Denver. And by the way, Utah was on a 4-game losing streak. They didn't have Gobert for those 4 games, but they were on a 4-game losing streak. Like, they needed to steady the ship. They had 5 days to prepare for this one. I thought Denver played hard. I don't really have a problem with how they played tonight, other than they just weren't capable of getting the win. As far as Michael Malone goes, I think you're right, just in terms of the temperament. Of course, we all know that he apologized to you ahead of the Lakers game, like in the oppressor, because he snapped at you the other night. No, you say I know this, but here's the thing: he didn't have to do that. Like, to me, that was a sign of like, hey, I think I'm running a little hot, and it's probably affecting everyone. It's probably affecting Matt Moore even. So if it's affecting, if I'm snapping at Matt Moore, I'm probably snapping at my team a little bit too much as well. Like, I think that to me, it almost signaled a, okay, I looked in the mirror. I've kind of been a dick lately. I need to like kind of own up to it. That was my opinion.
It was funny because, you know, like Nuggets PR was like, I'm glad everything got sorted. And I was like, I've been snapped at by coaches before. I will get snapped at by coaches again. I've asked bad questions. It was a bad question. Right. I've asked bad questions before. I'll ask bad questions again. Like, that's part of the job. Malone will make mistakes coaching. He'll leave Facu Campazzo in for the final 16 minutes of a game.
17.
I will ask bad questions. Like, it's part of it. And part of it too is like, you know, I don't, as there are boundaries, right? But Malone, I don't think was out of line at all with his response to me. Also funny was when I was like, oh no, that was my bad. And he's like, no, I know it was your bad. And I was like, all right. just to be clear, you shouldn't ask the question, but still. I think the vibe is much better around the team. You know, look, there's a lot, we're getting into that time period where there's going to be a lot of consternation and questions around Jamal between now over the next month and a half about when's he going to come back. The best intel I have is that Jamal's camp continues to be like, it's a ways away. There's time. It's going to take a while. And there's definitely incentive for that. Malone has made it clear. Like, they've pushed back on that. I will just continue to tell you, I have no reason to think that Jamal Murray will not be back in February. If I'm wrong,
I love that you are quadrupling down on this take. And by the way, I'm with you on it. No, I'm not with you. You're more confident than I am in it, but I'm with
here's the thing.
I think
it's very much like they could plan for it and get there and be like, he's just not there. Like, that's how it works. Is you make plans and you have a target in mind and you try and get to that moment. And then you get there and it's just like, I just still don't feel good enough, or I sprained an ankle, or you know, this tightened up on me. Like, it's entirely possible, but they have a road game after the All-Star break versus Sacramento, and then a home game. I forget who it's against. I believe that that's probably a decent that has not been talked about internally. I will say that has not been talked about internally. That is, if I were to look at it and go, when is the most likely return date? That makes the most sense.
Okay.
It's got to be. I only hope that they bring him back for a home game. That's my hope, is that they bring him back. His first game back needs to be at Ball Arena.
I think they know that kind of thing, though.
Quick MVP update. Okay. I know that this is the furthest thing.
Before you do there, do you want to do the Draymond thing first?
Sure.
The only reason I think it's first is because, you know, it came out today that Draymond, who had been out with a calf injury, is now going to be sidelined. It sounds like was he the 4 to 6 weeks, or was he indefinitely? Either way, it was because of, we find out it's a back injury that's causing this calf thing, which is eerily similar to what we heard about Michael Porter Jr. You know, remember, it was like his knee. It's his knee. Actually, it's a back thing that is causing this. And I just look at this. Here's the thing. The Warriors, to me, looked like the best team in basketball for the longest. Draymond goes down. Klay Thompson comes back. To me, I throw out this little slump they're in. Like, whatever. They're a good team at their best. But now you talk about Draymond missing real time. And, oh, by the way, this injury sounds like it's a unique one. I just look at that and I go, okay, that's one team that I thought was a top three contender that now, to me, has a huge question mark around him. And it's just further proof of why this season – We're at the 42 game point, so slightly above halfway now. This season to me is actually way more wide open than I think people think.
A couple notes. One, it's 2 weeks. He's going to be reevaluated in 2 weeks.
Okay.
So it's not 4 to 6. It's the 4 to 6 is KD.
KD, yeah. Yep. KD, yep.
Also,
another big one, because Brooklyn would be another one of those three or four teams. So I'm just talking about.
Yeah.
And you're right. And you're at 2 weeks, but it's a back is just all right.
Yeah, I agree. No, it's 2 weeks until he's reevaluated. They could reevaluate him in 2 weeks and be like, it's going to be another 6.
That's what happened to Michael Porter. If you recall, he was out indefinitely. And then next thing you know.
Yeah. So he's got a disc problem and they're going to talk about it. So yeah, like Golden State's not the same team without him.
They're not. I'll go as far as to say Golden State is not scary without Draymond Green.
I agree.
They're just not.
I agree. They'll probably rattle out. They may be under 500, honestly. That's how important he is to that team.
Yeah.
So I will also. But the other thing I would say, this is scary season in that the minutes are starting to catch up with guys. We're in the middle of the season.
Right.
It's 3 months of playing serious basketball, professional basketball, and so Everyone should be careful with their various teams. But yeah, look, the Suns are a rampaging machine that doesn't seem to ever get derailed because Chris Paul doesn't ever get hurt anymore.
I don't get it, man. It's the craziest thing.
Yeah, credit to Chris for going vegan. The Warriors are now susceptible. The Jazz probably make a run here with Gobert back, even though I will say this, their chemistry is extremely unstable. Like
Utah.
Rudy came back from COVID, and in his first interview, credited Devin Booker with his defense. What are you doing?
Yeah, of course.
What are you doing, man?
Of course. Yeah, that was a big deal. Basically, what that's saying is he was basically calling out his players, saying they don't defend the way the Phoenix Suns guards do. It's all. And by the way, this is coming on the heels of a lot of conversation from high-profile NBA analysts saying, like, Gobert saves those guys. He makes them look good. Gobert, and which is probably accurate, but Gobert to come out and say that tells you that locker room's maybe not so tight.
This is from Eric Walden from Jazz. Mitchell and Clarkson, who like Gobert's tweet, didn't exactly come off any better. When they were asked about Gobert's comments, they gave fairly passive-aggressive comments themselves. And honestly, the quotes from those two, while not benign in verbiage, undersold the annoyance that was apparent in their voices. Oh, and of course, there's the fact that Gobert, at heart, was basically right about their defense. One way to get Gobert to stop being honest about the team's bad defense is to play better defense. They played better defense tonight, and Gobert credited Mitchell. I will just tell you that Mitchell is probably going to be even more mad that he was patronized like that. So that just and so they're in that spot. And then there's Dallas.
Hold up, before you move on from that, you asked earlier should Denver change their strategy, and I said no. But if Denver got into a playoff series, here's the thing. Like people always talk about, I think the Jazz get too much. It swung the too far one way about, oh, they're just a regular season team. But I do think things like the strategy that works, the staggered lineups and Rudy Gay guarding Jokic, I do think like those things, I'm a lot more confident in the Nuggets destroying those things and those the margins in Utah's favor being smaller and the margins in Denver's favor being bigger in a playoff series when teams have 3 days to prepare for, okay, here's what they're doing, here's how we break that. So to me, it is a little, I don't want to say a gimmick, but it is a strategy that I think actually will hurt them in the regular season and help them or hurt them in the postseason. Do you agree with that or disagree? Meaning the staggered lineup, like the Nuggets, do you think can crack that code better when they have two, three days to prepare?
Yes.
I agree. Yep.
Also helpful in the playoff series, never playing the bench. So
that's a part of it for sure.
Yeah. So yeah, the West I think is more open. It's definitely open. Denver's surging. I will also say that the MVP race now is probably open. If the Warriors slip because Draymond's out.
Steph's had a bad like 5 weeks, man. Like he definitely has fallen out of that race.
I did the numbers on KD today for a video for Action Network. And if he misses 4 weeks, he can play a maximum of 63 games this season. After that, he gets into the 50s. The most of the least a player has played in a full 82 game season and won MVP is 58 by Bill Walton in 78.
Wow.
So if the vibes are better and the schedule is easier, guess who's going to be back in the MVP conversation in a very serious way?
And that's is it the guy that had 25, 15, and 14 tonight
against the best defender in the NBA? Yeah, that's right. So
we take Jokic for granted. We barely talked about him today, this whole show. He had 25, 15, and 14.
They quadruple teamed him at one point and he scored anyway.
25, 15, and 14, man. Like that's the best stat line for probably a half dozen Hall of Famers.
We're running long. I want to ask you about the quote about everyone knows we can't shoot.
I'll have to, full disclosure, I haven't seen the quote. I've only read it.
Okay. Because
it bothers you?
A little bit. Well, of note, though, where he scored on the four, there were two guys open on the weak side. And he'll usually make that kickout pass. But I guess I'm just in a spot of like, you know, Will's had a couple of good games, right? Will's had better games lately. AG, I think, has played really well. And AG's actually shot the ball pretty well.
He's on fire to start this one.
Yeah. You know, Monte, I think, is in a dip. But Monte...
Yeah, Monte's in a dip right now. It hurts.
But Monte was on a good run there for a while.
Yeah.
You know? And I get, like, it's one thing if you're surrounded by guys that can't shoot with the bench unit, but you don't, he doesn't play a lot of those minutes. So he plays mostly with the starters. They maximize those.
Right? I honestly think it's what we've been talking about. It's not just the like spot up open shot scoring. I think it's a lot of just like, can we drag the defense out on the perimeter on pick and rolls and this or that? He's, in my opinion, he's not wrong at all. He's not wrong at all. But he might be wrong to say it the way to say it public. Like, I do wonder how it feels to be Austin Rivers or Faku or one of these guys and be like, everyone knows we can't shoot, so you know I can't shoot too. Like, that probably is a little bit weird. You're right about that. It didn't need to be said.
Dioso Blanco, mainly here to make sure Moore stays in line given his fan allegiances. Lib1000 says he already mentioned the Chiefs. Well, I have not mentioned that team. I have not mentioned that particular team at all. I will not be mentioning that team.
Oh my god! I can't. All you suckers gave us a 5-star review. Suckers.
All not mention that team at all.
So ridiculous.
All right.
I'm sorry. I genuinely apologize, guys. I genuinely apologize.
All right. Clippers and Grizzlies up next. That Clippers game seems like that one feels like they probably better bring it.
Yeah, I mean that's a. I want to see what this team is made of. Like, you just blew a really bad lead. I want to see how you approach that game. And by the way, Ty Lue, I've talked about this. He's a fantastic coach, and I really think they've helped create. I love that the Clippers are the team that the Nuggets play coming out of their first practice, because it tells me like, okay, what's the strategy for how they're doing this? What are you going to do? And I'm curious to see if they come out and just, in my opinion, the Nuggets should win that game by 10 points. And I'm so curious to see if they do it.
I have a prediction for you.
Okay.
They go 5-1 on the homestand.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I think there's a real chance of it. I think there's a real chance of it.
Memphis isn't as good as they were when they faced him in Memphis. They're at home. Memphis is without Dylan Brooks still. He was out there for those games too, but it's tough. Detroit, I think, will probably be a tough one because of how Denver gets up for those games. But I think they beat the Clippers because they focus in after that embarrassing loss. They beat the Grizzlies because they remember that team and them beating them twice. And they've done well versus Memphis historically, and Steven Adams in particular. And then they barely get by Detroit. I think they go 5-1 on the homestand.
Okay. That'd be good. It's so ridiculous. The Nuggets have a 6-game road trip and in like 6 games in 10 days or something like that following it. So you kind of need to go 5-1 because you might go, 2-4 following that.
All right. Let's go wrap it up for Locked On Nuggets. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Thanks for everybody in the comments. Make sure, by the way, listen to, go subscribe to the YouTube channel. I didn't do that in the beginning.
Oh, where are we at? Have you checked? Have you checked where we're at?
I think
we're actually going to both be wrong. It's going to end up being, we get 1500 by the all-star break. Cause I think we're close to 1,000, 933. So I think we, guys, go hit subscribe. If you're listening to this on your phone, go on YouTube, subscribe to us, get us over 1,000. I think 2,000, but you know what? I think 1,000 definitely doable.
Join the comments section.
Yeah.
You guys will love it. Like, there's people talking back and forth. It's great. Zamora's really mad that I keep mentioning the team that I have not mentioned. I haven't mentioned that team at all.
By the way, Tariq, I saw Tariq in there giving us a shout out saying he loves our dynamic. Tariq's always, man, he's always in the chat, always interacting with us. We notice you guys. We don't always acknowledge like every comment that comes through, but trust me, we notice.
We see
people.
We appreciate it.
We see the people.
You guys have a great week. You have a great week. We'll be with you all every step of the way. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you guys again next time on Locked On Nuggets.